So I'd like to talk structure and substructure of cobalt magnetic halos, following on what Mike and Piero have done already. And I guess, you know, you're really, when you look at these kind of pictures, you're drawn to, you know, the idea that you can address really, really big questions here. The big question I think is in your mind, and I think I'll try to address this, is this, where is W? Is N and F? Where is W? And I think the story here goes like, when I saw the conference, I said, okay, I'll have a talk. So I say, can I have a talk? Said, oh, sure, yeah, talks. The talk's going to be long, 45-minute discussion. I said, oh, that's great. Then I got another talk, another email saying, actually, the talk's going to be 30 minutes. Then they said, actually, your talk's going to be shared with Carlos. You only have 15 minutes. When I said, well, I stopped complaining because I get a poster next time. So I said, okay. So if W had come, we would have 5 minutes now. So so we decided to keep an N and F show here anyway. Anyway, so the things that we've learned, you know, over the past, I would say, 20 years, that we've been doing numerical simulations of cold dark matter in this nonlinear scale that we call halos, are actually quite interesting. You know, these things are fairly universal in the shape of their mass profile. We also learned these things are cuspy. You know, in other words, we do bigger simulations, so the density does not seem to converge at the center. They're clumpy as well, which is what Mike and Piero also showed. And they're quite triaxial, very non-spherical. And these things, you know, have, all of this have interesting kind of consequences. So I'll try to just show basically what we've learned, you know, from Aquarius about some of these things to have time to go through all of these. But there are lots of still outstanding questions that at least are standing until the time of this new generation of simulation. But for example, yes, it's cuspy, but how does it diverge? Does it diverge like -1, descend density -1.2? There are several papers arguing for this, -1.5, there's older papers. Of course, this affects dramatically the annihilation signal that would come either from the main halo or from the subhalo. Also affects, of course, these galaxy rotation curves, CASP, cores, trialities. We also need to know, you know, the structure of substructure to be able to do this kind of, you know, annihilation maps, et cetera, and to talk about the boost factors. And this, you know, none of the earlier simulations have been able to do this. Also, we'd like to understand what is the phase space distribution of dark matter when you average over a very, very small scale, like the scale of Earth, for example. That is where the direct detection experiments are. We'd like to learn, you know, what that is. And of course, the extrapolations, even in the best simulations or something like this, are huge. But you want to learn what it is in order to make your extrapolations as educated as possible. And also, we'd like to understand, you know, what is this origin of this universality in the mass shape? Why is it that is that way? Also, because if you don't understand that from the point of view just of collisionless simulations or collisionless, you know, dynamics, you're not going to be able to answer Leo's question about, you know, what happens when you put the baryons, which is a much more complicated question. Okay, so there's a lot of scope, you know, for doing the kind of simulations that Piero, Mike, and I will be presenting now. So this is the Aquarius program. That's where we started this. The idea is to simulate not just one halo, but actually several, to get an idea of what is the, you know, cosmic scatter, the halo-to-halo scatter. And so we did 6 halos at different resolutions. This just shows one of them. It goes, you know, resolution 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, just changes the number of particles by factors of 8. The smallest one has about 800,000 particles within the radius that contains an overdensity of 50. And when I look at these numbers, actually, I'm astounded that when we did the NFW work, which was actually done here, was written here about 10 years ago or a bit more, we had 5,000 particles. So actually, the lowest simulation we do now has, you know, almost factor 20 more than what we had at the time. So talk about being bold extrapolating mass profiles when we, at that time. Anyway, so the Aquarius 1, you know, the highest resolution simulation we have, has about 1.5 billion particles. It's slightly larger than the G halo, but comparable to what Piero mentioned before. And these are the older, in comparison with the older Via Lactea simulations. This is what they look like. They all kind of look alike, as you may have already gathered from this idea of the more or less universal. And should I show the movie? You've seen the movie from Amina. Should I show it? Yeah, just gonna show. All right, okay. Here's a here, and you can see that basically at the beginning there's almost no structures. There's redshift here, of course, 500 kiloparsecs. We'll zoom at the same time. We'll kind of rotate around to give an idea of 3D, and you can see this is what, you know, something like the Milky Way halo would look like at redshift of 20, and almost all of this material will end up at, you know, within the period of radius, a couple hundred kiloparsecs from the center. You can see, you know, all the sites of first stars, all the stuff we talked about. I mean, I'm always astounded by, you know, the richness of the structure from where our Milky Way was collected. So you can see, you know, of course, you know, the filaments, the thousands of, you know, little subhalos, many of which survive, and how the whole thing gets collected at some point. And these filaments basically are the reason why the structure of the halo ends up being quite non-spherical, quite triaxial. If you look at triaxiality, actually is maximal near the center. So if you had a system where baryons, for example, were not important, then you need to take that into account if you want to make really detailed predictions. You can see lots of little things here. For example, these things could be satellites. And one of the things you can actually see is that if you look, you follow some of these groups of satellites that come, you see some of them don't get ejected out. Look at this one, for example. This goes out to sometimes, you know, more than a megaparsec away. It happens because as you collect a satellite comes with its own satellites. As you disrupt the groups of satellites, some of them actually get ejected out in a tidal tail. And they can go out to megaparsecs away. And that's, you know, so we speculated this in a couple of papers a couple of years ago. But this might be the reason why, for example, you have dwarf spheroidals, which are way, way isolated in the local group environment. So there are lots of little things that you can actually learn and do that do here that go beyond just, you know, looking at dark matter. Anyway, so with that, let's go back to my talk here. If you can find it, look perfect. So this is the queries, and it's important actually to do this kind of convergence studies where you do the same simulation, you know, with more and more numerical resources. You say, oh, you're wasting your time, but it's not, actually. Let me show you this. This is the level 3, 2, and 1 simulation. So you can see at some particular time, it doesn't really matter. And I'm just changing in the resolution. And you can see is that we not only, you know, have the same halo, but can actually track even the subhalos from run to run. Actually, there are most massive substructures are exactly at the same place, almost exactly the same place, have almost exactly the same mass. So we can actually do detailed convergence not only on the properties of the main halo, but also the properties of the substructures themselves. As you can, this is the highest resolution one. At some other time, you can, the idea here in the Zoom is just to illustrate the fact that, you know, there are, you know, embedded substructures within the substructures themselves. So this idea of having a nested hierarchy of substructures is clearly correct. Where does it break? How many of them there are? Hierarchies you expect? How important they are to the boost factor annihilation signals? It's something that Carlos will talk about in the next talk. Let me talk for the rest of my talk. Let me just concentrate on the main profile of the halo as a whole. And this is one of them. Just first, I want to show you numerical convergence. These are the same halo simulated 5 different times, going from a million particles to a billion particles, more or less, factors of almost 2,000 in mass. You can see from here, this is the density multiplied by r squared in order to bring out, you know, small differences in the profile. And you can see that the convergence is so exquisite, they can actually even track little bumps in the outer parts, which are the individual substructures. If this was an isothermal sphere, this would be just a flat line here, an alpha minus 2 profile. You can see this is clearly not the case. It gets shallower towards the center, and it gets steeper isothermal in the outer parts, which is, you know, the main idea of this NFW-like formula. This is just the same, just a circular velocity profile. You can actually use this also to derive, you know, very well understood radii where your convergence is achieved up to a particular accuracy, For example, this profiles are plotted down to the radius where the collisional relaxation time scale is of the order of the age of the universe. Inside of there is where you start seeing strong deviations from convergence. So for example, this radius actually has nothing to do with the softening. So for many of you who are neophytes to the game, and you will think, oh, so what is the softening? I want to know what is the resolution. It has nothing to do with the softening. You change the softening by a factor of 100. And this result does not change. Okay? Oh, 500 make it smaller, I mean, not make it larger. But anyway, so let me just show you now the profiles of the other six halos. And this is all of them together. I bumped them together, and I scaled them to the peak of this profile, the peak of this R squared density. And that is basically where the logarithmic slope has the isothermal value. And the thing you want to look from here is actually, although they are almost the same, they're not the same. And this is quite significant. Once you have, you know, 3 decades in radius where you can play with, you can actually realize very quickly that these things cannot be, you know, accurately reproduced by something like an NFW profile, which only has two scaling parameters. The whole idea of the NFW profile, this universality, was that you could have only two free parameters, which you can think of as the size and the mass of the object. And therefore, you can have a cluster and be exactly the same as a dwarf galaxy halo if you scale it properly. That's clearly not the case, not even for a given mass. All of its halos have the same mass. You see, this blue profile, for example, is much broader than the green profile, for example. Okay, so there's no way they can actually scale them and make them match. Of course, the differences are slight. They're not huge. So for many applications that don't require, you know, a detail, it's actually quite good. So for example, this is the residuals from NFW. You see, they're all about 20%, 30%. But if you want to really reproduce this in a more accurate fashion, you need to introduce another parameter, a shape parameter. And the easiest way to do this is, I'll just try to justify this next, will be by using something like a Cercic or a Nasto profile, where basically the logarithmic slope is just a simple power law of radius. And the exponent of the power law is the shape parameter. You see, this is not caused by, you know, the substructures and all that stuff. You can actually do this with just a mass profile, the enclosed mass profile, and the shapes are also different. All these bumps and wiggles, of course, disappear in the enclosed mass profile, but they're there. So clearly, they're not universal. And in previous papers, we actually show that this shape parameter also depends on the mass of the object. The more massive objects have a larger value of these Nasto parameters than the smaller ones. You may wonder whether this convergence or this also goes to the velocities of the dark matter particles. In fact, this is correct. This is the circular velocity dispersion profile function of radius for the 5 realization of the same halo. You can see that these things converge, you know, exquisitely down to the smallest resolution radius. This is the anisotropy profile, actually goes more radial and then actually drops down. You know, see, this is actually a significant and a fairly common feature in all the Aquarius halos. These are the 6 halos now put together, scaled again to the peak of that particular profile, just to make to bring out, you know, differences. And you can see they're actually different. Again, they're not. You cannot just take one and rescale it to make it look exactly like the other. It will look almost like the other, but not exactly. And these are highly, highly significant. They're not very different, but they're very significantly different, which is not the same thing. Interestingly, remember I showed that this blue halo was the one that was broadest in density. It's also broadest in velocity dispersion. And this is not something fortuitous. It's actually hiding something interesting. There is some universality in the structure of these halos, which is not fully reflected in either the velocity structure, the velocity dispersion profiles, or the mass profiles. You can actually see that these things are also different in anisotropy profiles. The blue one is actually much more isotropic than the other ones. So there is a fair amount of halo-to-halo scatter. And just a couple of words about the structure of the cusp. This is the logarithmic profile. This is something that Pierre also alluded to in their newest work. The early work by Moore et al, when we first published NFW, was arguing that the cusp was actually much steeper, like 1.5. It is D log rho, D log r. Clearly, that's not the case. Okay. Later work by Diemand and Pierre's group argued for a 1.2 slope in several papers, even one of the most recent ones, and that's actually also clearly incorrect. Right? These profiles are getting shallower all the way down to the center, and there's no obvious place where this thing actually is turning over to a particular value. At least we haven't found any like that. And in the best cases, we actually resolve things that are actually shallower than -1, which agrees with the G-halo results that Piero showed earlier. This is, of course, true for all these halos. So you can be confident that the cusp, at least from the best simulations that we have today, is not steeper than -1 or so. And I should make this argument even stronger by looking at the maximum asymptotic slope we can have. In other words, you just take inside your innermost resolved radius all the mass you have, you know the density at the edge, and there's only the limited ways in which you can put this in the cusp and still have a power law. you'll get to the same conclusion here. They have to be shallower than minus 1. In other words, something like NFW cannot be true all the way to the center. Okay. That's actually, I think, interesting that, that we actually agree with the new results by from our Pierre's group as well. So let me go now into my last couple of plots to this universality, this fact that, you know, if a halo deviates from some kind of average halo in density, it also deviates in velocity in the same way. The easiest way to show this is by looking at a pseudo phase space density. In other words, just take, instead of taking either velocity dispersion or density in spherical shells, just take the density and divide by some power of the velocity dispersion. If you divide by the cube of the velocity dispersion, you get something that has the dimensions of a phase space density. And if you do this, it's remarkable that you actually get things that look exactly like a power law. And what's more remarkable also is that not only looks like a power law, all of these halos, even the ones that were deviant, look exactly the same. They look on top of each other. So there seems to be that this particular quantity, this pseudo phase space density, this stratification of the phase space density that follows a power law, seems to be a much more fundamental property of the structure of cold dark matter halos. What it makes it more intriguing is the fact that, and we go back to this one, just a few curves around, is the fact that this, for example, this power law you see here, is actually not a fit. This is the prediction from the secondary info self-similar solutions that Ed Bertschinger did in the early 80s. Basically, just take a point mass in an Einstein distributed universe and just let things collapse on top of it. Since you have so few parameters, then you actually can work out what is the solution. The solution has exactly this slope. This is not a fit. Right? The only fit is just the vertical scaling here. So I think that this is clear proof. We had already seen this and pointed this out with James Taylor in the audience here several years ago in much, much lower resolution simulations. And we had sort of speculated that this was an interesting way to go all the way to the center. Because the power law is a lot easier to extrapolate than something that's curving over. And that could actually give you clues as to what is, for example, the innermost cusp of dark matter. And if you actually go through that paper here, you can actually work out analytically what is the structure of the inner cusp all the way to the center. And the cusp has a power law, which is -3/4, -0.75, which is shallower than minus 1.
Can I ask quickly?
Sure. I'm almost done. So. This is just my summary here. The mass profiles are not universal. They're much better described by something like Ionesto. The cusp is shallower than minus 1. And the phase space density profiles seem to be a much more fundamental property of dark matter than either the mass or the velocities themselves. So I think we're not taking lots of questions because Carlos needs to speak as well, but while we switch.
As Carlos sets up, we can take a couple. Just really quickly, I remember in your paper with James, I think I remember, it's been a while, but when you derive the slope, it depends on the velocity and anisotropy. In principle, there should, if that's true, if that approximation is right, the spherical genes equation, if you've measured the velocity and anisotropy of the halos, and I wonder if the connection is the same. That is, I think if stuff is slightly more positive beta, then you get a slightly lower, higher slope. I can't remember.
In the paper with James, we only looked at isotropic solutions. Halos are isotropic, very near isotropic near the center. So I think those approximations close to the core, they actually do work out.
There's follow-up work by other groups,
you can change things. Okay. But since we see that these things are isotropic near the center, I think those solutions are still valid for the structure of the very inner cusp.